Moses went up the mountain to see the promised land. But Yahweh said, you can't go in, since this is what I planned. Joshua's taking over, so here you'll have to die. But I won't watch you when you go, can't stand to see you cry. Moses was a wily man, who always had a clever plan. He didn't breathe his final breath, instead old Moses faked his death.
Yes, I'm really going to argue that Moses faked his own death. Or that somebody helped him fake it. But that's only part of the story and part of the song. I faded it out there to avoid giving you too many spoilers. If you want to know the full story and hear the whole song, you're going to have to listen to the end. Well, I guess you could skip ahead almost to the end and hear the complete song, but, you know, that would be cheating. And you know what Yahweh does to cheaters, right? Whatever he wants to. Anyway, welcome back to Sermons. This is episode number 74, entitled Moses Faked His Death. And that's also the title of this episode's theme song. I wrote the lyrics and specified the style, and the Suno AI wrote the music and performed the song. Does a surprisingly good job, I think. If you want to play around with it, it's suno.com. And now that I know how to generate these songs using artificial intelligence, I plan to start including them from time to time, either as opening or closing themes, or both, as in this case, or as intermission music somewhere in the middle. My plan for this time is to finish up Deuteronomy, which also finishes up the five books of Moses, the Pentateuch that's traditionally believed to have been written by Moses. There are reasons to disbelieve this tradition. One of the main reasons being included in these final two chapters we're about to read and discuss. But as we'll see, that reason may not be conclusive. We're picking up the story at the beginning of Deuteronomy chapter 33, right after Moses has finished both his long-winded sermon and his long-winded song, and right after Yahweh has told him to go up on the mountain, look over into the promised land to see where he's not allowed to go, and then to die. Is that really what happened? We'll see. And this is the blessing wherewith Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. Could Moses have written that sentence? The Hebrew version of that sentence, I mean. Well, yeah. Assuming Hebrew existed as a written language at that time, there's nothing illogical about that sentence being written by Moses. Just as there'd be nothing illogical about me saying that before my death, I recorded this episode of Sermons. I mean, I did record it, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to it. And I obviously recorded it before my death, whether I'm dead as you listen to it or not. And he said, the Lord came from Sinai and rose up from Seir unto them. He shined forth from Mount Paran. And he came with 10,000s of saints. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. Yea, he loved the people. All his saints are in thy hand, and they sat down at thy feet. Every one shall receive of thy words. Moses commanded us a law, even the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob. And he was king in Jeshurun, when the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel were gathered together. Let Reuben live and not die, and let not his men be few. And this is the blessing of Judah. And he said, hear, Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him unto his people. Let his hands be sufficient for him, and be thou an help to him from his enemies. So now he's going through all the tribes, Reuben and Judah and so on, and bestowing blessings on all of them. getting ready to die, you know. And next he comes to the Levites, the tribe of the priests. And of Levi, he said, let thy Tumim and thy Urim be with the Holy One, whom thou didst prove at Massah, and with whom thou didst strive at the waters of Meribah. You remember the Urim and the Tumim. They were communication devices that caused the gemstones in the priest's breastplate to light up in various sequences, to send coded messages to the priests, messages from the Yahwehlians when they were not physically present, who said unto his father and to his mother, I have not seen him, neither did he acknowledge his brethren, nor knew his own children, for they have observed thy word and kept thy covenant. They shall teach Jacob thy judgments and Israel thy law. They shall put incense before thee and whole burnt sacrifice upon thine altar. Bless, Lord, his substance and accept the work of his hands. Smite through the loins of them that rise against him and of them that hate him, that they rise not again. And of Benjamin, he said, the beloved of the Lord shall dwell in safety by him, and the Lord shall cover him all the day long, and he shall dwell between his shoulders. And of Joseph, he said, blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew, and for the deep that coucheth beneath, and for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things put forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the lasting hills, and for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the goodwill of him that dwelt in the bush, the burning bush. Let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph and upon the top of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of unicorns. With them he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth. And they are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh. And of Zebulun he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in thy going out, and Issachar in thy tents. They shall call the people unto the mountain. There they shall offer sacrifices of righteousness, for they shall suck of the abundance of the seas, and of treasures hid in the sand. And of Gad, he said, blessed be he that enlargeth Gad. He dwelleth as a lion, and teareth the arm with the crown of the head. And he provided the first part for himself, because there in a portion of the lawgiver was he seated. And he came with the heads of the people. He executed the justice of the Lord and his judgments with Israel. And of Dan, he said, Dan is a lion's whelp. He shall leap from Bashan. And of Naphtali he said, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full with the blessing of the Lord, possess thou the west and the south. And of Asher he said, let Asher be blessed with children. Let him be acceptable to his brethren, and let him dip his foot in oil. Thy shoes shall be iron and brass, and as thy days, so shall thy strength be. There is none like unto the God of Yeshurun, who rideth upon the heaven in thy help, and in his excellency on the sky. Yeshurun, spelled with a J, but I think it's pronounced with a Y. It just means Israel. And in this case, the word that is translated as God, you know, the God of Yeshurun, it's the singular El, not the plural Elohim. So it's talking about one single God in this case, the God of Israel, and that's Yahweh. So Yahweh at this time was not the God of the whole world, although he had his aspirations. He was kind of offended, actually, that Elyon, the Most High, had assigned him the responsibility of this rather minor nation of Israel. And he decided he was going to make them the greatest people on earth, which, you know, would make him the greatest God on earth or over earth. If you don't know what I'm talking about, about the Elyon assigning him Israel, go back and listen to the previous episode, episode 73. Now, the Hebrew word that's translated as heaven here is Shamaim, which literally means skies. And the word that is translated as sky is a different word, oddly enough, Hakim, and that literally means clouds. So a better translation of this verse would be, there is no one like the God of Israel who rides in the skies and majestically on the clouds. You know, this is kind of like way back in Genesis 1, the way they translated that. It literally says, in beginning, the gods created the skies and the land. But the translators couldn't just stick with the literal meaning of the Hebrew words because they had an agenda. They had a monotheistic agenda. So instead of gods, we get God with a capital G, creating the heaven, which is a loaded word compared to skies, and the earth, which makes it sound like the planet Earth. But it really just means land. The earth was already here when the gods arrived and terraformed it. That's how they created the land. And they created the skies by improving the atmosphere. The earth existed. It was just unformed and empty, which is a better translation, I think, than without form and void, because it's easier to understand. But let's go on. The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he shall thrust out the enemy from before thee, and shall say, destroy them. This reminds me of that song, Leaning on the Everlasting Arms. Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The fountain of Jacob shall be upon a land of corn and wine. Also his heavens shall drop down dew. Happy art thou, O Israel. Who is like unto thee, O people saved by the Lord, the shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy excellency? And thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places. And that's the end of chapter 33. So finally we're up to chapter 34. I could have left a lot of that stuff out, but I wanted to read it for completeness's sake. Chapter 34, coming up, is the last chapter of the last book of Moses. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, that is over against Jericho. And the Lord shewed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan, and all Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim, and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah unto the utmost sea. And the south, and the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So notice, the Lord accompanied Moses to the mountaintop, just like in my song, and showed him the promised land that he wasn't going to get to see up close. It doesn't say whether Yahweh stayed with him after he showed him the land. Now, when I wrote the song, I was thinking that, you know, he then left Moses alone there, after which Moses faked his own death. But that may not be correct. I'll talk more about that in a minute. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. Now, think about that verse. If Moses wrote this book, this sentence doesn't make sense. You know, it's kind of like that Private Eye novel that I can't remember the name of. It was written in the first person, as many of them are. And at the end, the protagonist gets shot and killed. And it basically says, I died. You know, does that make any sense? I guess it made sense to the author, who didn't want to have to go back and change everything to third person and retype everything. See, this was before word processors, where you could just do find and replace all. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, over against Beth Peor. But no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. How convenient. You know, first of all, who buried him? It says he buried him. The ancient Hebrews used a lot of ambiguous pronouns. But in this case, the only one other than Moses who had been present was Yahweh. So it sounds like Yahweh buried him. And in an undisclosed location, you know, which was convenient if, you know, for Moses, if he was faking his own death, and especially if Yahweh was in on it. And whether he was in on it or not, it was in his interest to have the Israelites believe that Moses was dead, whether he really was dead or not, because he wanted Joshua to take over, but he knew that if Moses was still around, you know, factions would develop, you know. One group would want Moses to still be the leader, and another group would want the younger guy, Joshua. So it was to avoid conflict that Moses either had to die or had to appear to have died. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. Now, 120 sounds like it's pretty old, but there were a lot older people in the Bible. You know, early on, you know, Adam lived to be 900 or so, and Methuselah and all. You know, I think Noah was 600 or something like that. 120 years is nothing. You know, I guess by the time of Moses, though, this Yahwehian human bloodline, this hybrid bloodline, had become diluted by intermarriage with proto-humans. And, you know, that started, you know, right after Adam, you know, because otherwise, where did Cain's wife come from, for instance? You might remember Spencer Tracy making that exact same point in Inherit the Wind. So, you know, I guess 120 years was pretty old, but it says his natural force had not abated. So what killed him? And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. Now, if Moses wrote this book, how the heck did he know how long the Israelites mourned him? You know, unless he wasn't really dead, he was just, you know, in hiding, you know, viewing things from afar. And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him, and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, in all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh, and to all his servants, and to all his land, and in all that mighty hand, and in all the great terror which Moses shewed in the sight of all Israel. Now, if Moses wrote this, he was really full of himself, wasn't he? Full of something. Well, that's the end of Deuteronomy, the end of the books of Moses. But it's not the end of the story of Moses, because he's going to appear again in the New Testament. For instance, in Matthew 17, let's start in verse 1. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John his brother, and bringeth them up into an high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. Now, Matthew says his face did shine as the sun. But Mark only mentions that his clothes turned whiter. And Luke only says that, quote, the fashion of his countenance was altered, unquote. And John doesn't mention it at all. So who knows? But it's from Matthew that we get the term transfiguration, so we'll stick with his account. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias talking with him, talking with Jesus, in other words. Now here's Moses over 1,200 years after his supposed death, appearing at the transfiguration of Jesus. Surely he must have been really dead by that time, whether he'd faked his own death originally or not, right? Well, not necessarily. And I don't mean that he just actually lived that long, had that long of a lifespan. There's another explanation. If Moses faked his own death, with or without the help of Yahweh, he had to have gone somewhere to hide out. And the natural assumption is that he left the planet with Yahwehian assistance, whether at Yahweh's direction or by some mutinous faction of the Yahwehian Space Force. Now, Einstein showed that as a spacecraft approaches the speed of light, time passes much more slowly for its occupants than for the inhabitants of the planet they just left, for instance. This is known as time dilation. So if the Yahwehian craft reached light speed, or at least approached it, with Moses aboard, he could have aged very little while 1,200 years passed on Earth. Now, there's another question about this verse. Who is this Elias fellow that appeared along with Moses and Jesus? Well, he's usually known by another name, Elijah. And as you may know, Elijah was one of those prophets who, rather than dying, was just taken up into heaven, or into the sky, I should say. Now, the story is told in the second book of Kings, chapter 2, when Elijah and his protege, Elisha, are traveling from city to city. Verse 11 says, "And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by whirlwind into heaven." So, a chariot of fire. That's pretty clearly a rocket ship. And horses of fire, probably the retro rockets, you know, what's burning to keep it aloft while a tractor beam grabs Elijah and levitates him up to the ship. And that was the last anybody ever saw of Elijah. Well, until the transfiguration. No doubt this ship, or some other ship that he was transferred to, maybe, this ship reached light speed, or near light speed, and he experienced the same type of time dilation that Moses did. By the way, time dilation could also explain why it's been 2,000 years since Jesus said he was going to go and prepare a place for us and then come back. You know, I mean, he could have been rushing the whole time and it still have 2,000 years passed here on Earth. Anyway, time dilation made it possible for both Moses and Elijah to still be alive and put in an appearance at the transfiguration of Jesus. By the way, you may remember that Moses had been transfigured as well. Well, sort of transfigured, back in Exodus 34, when he went up the mountain the second time and got the second pair of tablets that contained the Ten Commandments. Remember, he broke the first pair of tablets in a fit of rage when he came down the mountain and found the people worshiping the golden calf. Anyway, Exodus 34, verse 28. "And he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments." I think this he pronoun refers to Yahweh, not Moses, although it's ambiguous. Those ancient Hebrew pronouns tended to be ambiguous. Now, what about the 40 days without food and water? Is that even possible? Well, as far as food goes, yes. That's about the limit of how long you can go without food, but your body can't go anywhere near that long without water. However, it just says he didn't drink any water during that time. You know, that he could have gotten water other ways. They could have had him on an IV drip for a lot of that time. Well, you say, well, why would they have done that? Because evidently, at some point during those 40 days, Moses ventured into a restricted area. A restricted area where the main reactor was, apparently, and got sick from radiation poisoning. So most of that 40 days could have been spent in the ICU of the Yahwehian sick bay. And he was just too sick to eat or drink during that time. That's why he didn't eat or drink for 40 days. And it came to pass when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tables of testimony in Moses' hand, when he came down from the mount, that Moses wist not that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. And when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come nigh him. So he had bad radiation burns on his face. It wouldn't have been shining exactly, not glowing, but it would have been shiny, very red, moist and oozing. Bad enough to freak people out and make them afraid to come near him. Well, that finishes the story of Moses faking his death. But we still have a little time left, so let's read a little more and see what happened right after Moses and Elijah appeared with Jesus. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here three tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias. Now, a tabernacle is just a tent. And in fact, most translations do say just tent or shelter. But the King James Version says tabernacle, which makes it sound like it's like the tabernacle from the days of Moses and Joshua. It's not the same word, though, because Matthew was written in Greek, not Hebrew. Peter's basically just offering to, you know, put up three tents so that Jesus, Moses, and Elijah will be more comfortable and they can sit around and chat. So he saw them as actual physical human beings, not spirits. Moses and Elijah were as alive as Jesus was at that time. Well, that's about it for this time. Out of time. We'll take up another book of the Bible in the next episode. Maybe Joshua, maybe not. Until then, keep the faith. Don't venture into any restricted areas. And if you do, be sure to wear your sunscreen. Now let's hear the complete song, Moses Faked His Death.
Moses went up the mountain to see the promised land. But Yahweh said, you can't go in, since this is what I planned. Joshua's taking over, so here you'll have to die. But I won't watch you when you go, can't stand to see you cry. Moses was a wily man who always had a clever plan. He didn't breathe his final breath, instead old Moses faked his death. He hitched a ride on a rocket ship. They blasted off and let her rip. The speed of light brought time dilation. The next stop was transfiguration. Old Moses was a wily man. Old Moses was a wily man who always had a clever plan. Final breath, instead old Moses faked his death. Moses and Elijah neither ever died. They met with Jesus on the mount before he's crucified.